Did you know that Gazette print subscribers have full access to digital content at no extra cost? Activate your digital subscription now to enjoy the latest headlines, sports updates, and more at thegazette.com or through the Gazette mobile app. Read the page-by-page daily newspaper with the Green Gazette, perfect for on-the-go reading. Activate your subscription at thegazette.com/activate or call 319-398-8333.
Oh man, I wanted to keep hearing that music. I don't know, that bumper music. Anyway, this is Jeff Johnson from the Gazette along with my cohorts, KJ Pilcher and Jeff Linder. And the Triple Option podcast is back, baby. We were the first, by the way, not that other national outlet that uses the same theme.
Right?
This is all about us. But anyway, we're here to talk about the prep football season, which began last week, believe it or not, with some week zero games. And then everybody gets kicked off on Friday night. We're recording this on Wednesday. So, boys, are you ready? I guess it doesn't matter. We have to be, right?
Yeah.
I've already started. So.
Oh, that's right.
You guys
that's
need
right.
to catch up.
Man. KJ did do an eight-player game last week. Went out to Springville, watched the Orioles play Iowa Valley, a team that apparently is really, really good. KJ, why don't you begin by telling us what you saw? And, you know, it looks like Iowa Valley is a legit team, huh?
Yeah, you know, first off, this was a game that wasn't originally, on the docket. It was something that came about because Lone Tree canceled their varsity season, lack of numbers there, and actually not just a lack of numbers, but just a lack of upperclassmen too. I think one or two seniors, the rest were freshmen and sophomore, and they only had 10 to 12 guys out. So this left teams with an open week, and it was something that worked out for Springville and Iowa Valley to be able to slide into a week zero game that they didn't have originally. Nice opportunity to kind of shake the rust off, and boy, Iowa Valley looks really good. And I'll say that Springfield was missing Mason Hoy, one of their top players, but really tight, really good first half. Iowa Valley scored on their first possession. They were able to hold Springville, and then fumbled snap on the punt, turnover on downs, gave the ball to Iowa Valley on the Springville 8. And of course, when you give a short field to Nolan Kriegel, you're not going to keep them out of the end zone or keep them away from points very often. So he was able to run in with his first of four rushing touchdowns right off the bat. Then I think they scored on their second possession, and then they were held. Springfield held them scoreless the rest of the first half. Right before the break, Springfield was able to get on the board. Trying to remember, I think it was Chase Marsh that stripped the ball from Kriegel about midfield, and then was able to recover it himself. Then they were able to get that was about midfield, and they were able to drive down and get a 31-yard field goal from Christian Aguiano as time expired in the first half. But the second half, it was all Iowa Valley, and of course, it was all Nolan Kriegel. He rushed for a 55-yard TD. The very first play of the third quarter, they got the ball back. They only took two plays before he broke a 48-yarder, and they were off. And Kriegel's one of those players that you're kind of looking at coming off his sophomore season that was so productive, one of the state leaders in touchdowns. And, of course, he rushed for 212 yards and four scores. Also had 53 yards passing and a touchdown. So that that touchdown pass was to Josh Reed right before or in the second to start the second quarter. So I was really impressed, obviously, with Kriegel. Everybody probably expected him to play the way he did. Really bounced back after the slow start in the first half. But the defense, you know, Springfield's a good team. Springfield's a team that's going to do some really good things. I think Lindy, you might have had them to lead their district, possibly.
I had them second in their district to Edco.
Okay. So, well, among the district leaders, yeah. And Iowa Valley really, really pulled away and ran away with it in the second half. So, I think JJ, you nailed it on the head. Iowa Valley is very, very good. Fifth in our preseason poll. And I think it was a nice one to get under their belt before facing Don Bosco this week.
I think this proves that Iowa Valley is a prohibitive favorite in that district, District 5. You know, I had Bell Plain as the second team in that district. They got thumped 50-0 by, was it Janesville, Clarksville? I think it was Janesville. So I think that there's a lot of separation between Iowa Valley and everybody else. Fortunately, they've got a nice, challenging non-district schedule. They've got Don Bosco this week, which will be a really good barometer, you know, if how good they really are. And then it doesn't get much easier for Springville. They play Montezuma in week one.
We had a couple other games around the state. Jeff mentioned Janesville's 50-0 went over at Bell Plain. Then Booyer Valley beat Newell Fonda 53-28 and East Mills in overtime over Griswold 34-32. Those were all 8-player games on week zero. So, all right, boys, let's turn the page to both, I guess, 8-player and 11-player. We've run a bunch of features, certainly, leading up, one on each class, kind of leading into, I guess, tomorrow night, Thursday night. There's a few games around the state, but then Friday night, certainly for us. But why don't we go through the Metro and Iowa City, I guess, maybe, and maybe express some thoughts on each club. Quick, I don't know where you want to start. How about Xavier, since we have them ranked number one in Class 4A in our preseason Gazette poll. Saints return an awful lot of players from last season, which is kind of unique because they seem to always, you know, kind of cycle through a lot of senior class, you know, and then in more inexperienced guys behind them. But a lot of guys that played a lot of football last season for Xavier, and knock on wood, if the Saints can stay healthy this season, they are going to be a handful. Accurate?
I agree. Are we in unanimity? I think that's a word, that Xavier's the best team in the Metro, probably by quite a bit.
Of all the classes, I think Prairie is going to be really good, but we'll get to Prairie in a little bit here. Regardless, I mean, this is you throw experience players with an experienced coaching staff and a tradition of winning, and you know, probably trying to prove something after last season when Xavier lost what, 3 games?
Lost 7-4.
Lost 4 games. You know, what do you expect out of the Saints, I guess, guys, other than a lot of wins?
I think we agree that they're going to be right there late November. We've all got them ranked very high in our ballots. I'd be very surprised if they're not in the dome if they stay healthy.
You know, they've got really good skill position players, obviously bringing back Cash Parks, Carter Hoffman. You know, there's always players that step in, you know, kind of, you know, getting those that experience on the scout team, right? You know, junior varsity players or whatever that seem to be able to step in and hit the ground running in that system. But with Cash Parks and Hoffman, they're going to be able to put up a lot of points. You know, with Jim O'Connell's defense, they're going to plug in the parts and they're going to be pretty good. The question for me is, how are they going to be up front? I think that's going to be kind of the fulcrum for this season on how well they do. If they're able to really solidify the lines on both sides of the ball, boy, I certainly could see a dome trip for them.
I'm sorry, I cut out there. I apologize. I'm having a little computer glitch here real quick. So where do you want to go next? Let's go to Prairie since I just talked about them. I think this is going to be a really, really good football team. It was a team that had a very tough schedule last season and played a lot of underclassmen. And, again, a pretty tough schedule, you know, coming into this thing. But I think an awful lot of firepower when you look at leading rusher back, B.J. Bush Jr., David Faison's an All-State player, being looked at by major Division I programs. He had 13 touchdown catches last season as a tight end. I think Kale Kongshog, who was kind of the backup last season as a sophomore, is I hear really, really good things about him. I think he'll step in and be a tremendous quarterback right away. I think everybody felt out there in talking in the offseason to Coach Kyle Knock that they felt like Prairie was maybe a year away last year. That being said, beat Southeast Polk, right? Three-time champ now? Three in a row?
I think it's four.
Played Iowa City Liberty. Is it four?
I think it's four. Maybe I'm wrong.
Lost to Liberty by 5 points. We all know how good Liberty was. And I really like this team. I think it's got an opportunity to win a lot of football games. Tell me I'm wrong, I guess.
No, I don't think you're wrong because their schedule is not what it has been. It's kind of
Correct. Eased
up a little bit. I think the association did them a little bit of a favor. They only play one Central Iowa team, and that's Waukee Northwest, which I think is going to be really, really good. They only play one of the Iowa City schools in West. I think that this is probably at least a 6-win team.
And we look at the opener at Linmar will be a good barometer, probably for both teams, right, KJ?
Yeah, it's interesting. A new coach there at Linmar. The two previous co-coaches stayed on staff as well. So I think we're going to get a good idea of where both teams are going to be right out of the gate. Linmar's got some guys that they're going to have to replace, like a Dylan Mazinski, obviously, who was a great all-around athlete for the Lions last year. But, one of the things about Prairie that you didn't mention that I know has been something that we've talked about in the preseason is their coaching staff, what Kyle Knock really assembled there. We know that his dad Don has helped out. Mo Blue joined him last season, the former head coach at Cedar Rapids, Washington, and somebody that he's coached with over the years. I think both of them were on Paul James's staff at Wash previously, and then Tim Lewis, former Kennedy head coach, has joined them as well. So a lot of football knowledge there to be able to trickle down on those players. My only question is, did too many chefs spoil the broth? Is that the term? You know, but I'm guessing the way these guys know each other and have worked together and been around each other through the game of football, it'll be a pretty cohesive group. And of course, we'll see that on display this Friday out at Linmar.
And you mentioned Linmar, KJ. Dwayne Orr is a new coach, but not really a new coach. He's been around. He's had other multiple head coaching jobs. Mount Vernon comes to mind. Has been in the school system there as a teacher and a coach at other levels. So, I mean, he knows about this program certainly. And as you mentioned too, Bent Martins and Chad Tompkins, who were the co-head coaches last season, remain on staff. So there's a lot of continuity there. It's just, as you mentioned, I think it's just a matter of Linmar losing a number of really, really quality football players, I guess. And, right. You know, it might be a work in progress, especially early in the season. I guess we'll have to wait and see. So spin the wheel. Who's next? How about Cedar Rapids Kennedy? What do you think, guys? Coming off an uncharacteristic 3-6 season, first time not in the playoffs since 2014. Lost some firepower, quarterback graduated, top running back graduated. What do you see from the Cougars?
KJ?
Well, I think this is going to be kind of a redemption year for them. Yes. Sounds like last year did not set well with anybody. As far as leaders on the team, I think it's going to be something that's going to emerge as the season goes along. But it sounds like they're pretty high on who they have coming back, guys that are going to be able to be that are going to step in. You know, the one interesting thing is I think one of the calling cards for Kennedy football has been their defense, and especially the linebackers, some really aggressive playmaking linebackers that, you know, kind of ball hawks a little bit and living on the other side of the line of scrimmage. And they didn't have that last year. And I think that'll be something that they emphasize to kind of reclaim this season. You know, Brian White is approaching the career wins lead, all-time trying to become the all-time wins leader there. I think he's four wins short of that. So, you know, I think there's a little added motivation from last year's performance to be being able to do that for Coach White. I think this is a team that's – this is going to be more like a Kennedy from 2 or 3 years ago compared to a year ago, if that makes sense.
No, I agree. Heard a lot of good things. And actually, I went over and talked to the guys a couple of weeks ago at the start of practice. And very upbeat. Coach White said they kind of went back to basics and preached fundamentals as far as tackling, which goes to your point, KJ. About maybe being a little less stingy on that side of the ball than normal. Will Woodring is going to be the quarterback, and he was behind, you know, Vinny Gianforte last season, but everything I heard was said that he's certainly very highly capable. And you know, Dawson Doherty's one of the fastest kids in the state, right, Jeff? You know that.
Yes.
At wide receiver, so apparently there's good team speed on this team. Deacon Kuchera, tight end, is a guy that Coach White said they might use a lot, like Sean Beyer, that everybody knows, the former All-Stater in Iowa, tight end, and I think got a cup of coffee in the NFL. So I think, I think KJ, you nailed it right on the head. This is a season in which I think they feel that. You know, maybe they need some redemption from what, you know, what was uncharacteristically down year last year. So
historically, Kennedy's.
Who should we go to next?
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Finish your thought.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, historically, Kennedy doesn't stay down long. You know, they're 3-8. The last time they won three games was 2014. And then the year after that, they were state runners up. They go 3-8 to 13-1. I think they're 4-4. Let me look here. They're 4-4 in 2020. And the year after that, they're 10-1. So they have showed up. You know, under Coach White, they've showed a pretty good trend of bouncing back on down seasons.
What is really weird, and this kind of segues into maybe the next two teams that we talk about, Kennedy does not play its two crosstown rivals.
Very, very odd.
Cedar Rapids. Yes, neither Washington or Jefferson will play Kennedy this season.
Wow.
And yeah, you know, I guess it kind of stinks as far as traditional wise and things like that, but we do have Jefferson and Washington playing on opening night, and I know KJ, you're going to be there. Should we start with the west side maybe, and the Jayhawks, who have returning some pretty darn good skill guys, right?
Yeah, I think that's the, you know, I think that's the exciting thing about that. They've got some really good playmakers. LJ Nainow, obviously, at the top of that list for Jefferson. But, you know, I think the thing that that you see with Ed Miles is really every year there's been a step, and there's been progress, and now where do they go? What's the next gain or improvement that's made to the program? And that's what I'm really excited to see here this Friday. You know, Eric Addy's in his second year at Wash. You're expecting maybe some better things now that he's kind of got his what he wants to accomplish, established kind of his culture, I guess, the buzz term that coaches and programs use. You know, it's still in its infancy. Jefferson's a little further ahead, but, you know, what do they have to go with some of those athletes? And one of the things that always seemed to rear its head was discipline with the Jayhawks, especially defensively. There are some times where they would make stops, and then all of a sudden, whether it's emotions or a lack of discipline, they would commit penalties and just turn around or negate all the good they had just done. And I know Ed Miles a couple times after games really kind of let his players know about how that won't fly in the future. That's, I think, one thing I'm going to be looking for from Jefferson is, you know, have they kind of changed that a little bit as far as the players go? Because, you know, the coaches, what they preach, but are the players able to go about their business and kind of keep their emotions and that intensity in check to where it's productive and doesn't hurt them like it did maybe in the last year or two at times?
I think Jefferson
was an outstanding. Yeah. Sorry, Jeff, go ahead.
No, Jefferson could be better this year and struggle to win as many games as they did last year. Their schedule is much, much better, stronger than it was. They lose Des Moines North, they lose Des Moines East, they lose Marshalltown on their schedule, and they're, you look at that and there aren't any gimmies there anymore. And they're going to have to be better to get to that 5-4 mark again.
Was just going to mention Vernon Benda had a really good junior season at quarterback.
Yes.
And I know he's one of the captains on this team. And I just, that Benda to Nainow combination was pretty dynamic last season for Jefferson. So would imagine it'll be the same thing this year. As far as Washington goes, also a multiple-year starting quarterback in Grady McGuire. Nick Riley's a guy who's very experienced and plays on both sides of the ball very effectively. And then I guess right. The big news for Washington is back in 4A. Although that might not be a great thing considering the schedule.
Hey, you know, speaking of going back to 4A, I think Wash and Xavier play at Kingston this season.
Yeah.
When was the last time Xavier played at Kingston as far as against Wash?
Were they in the same district a couple years ago when Wash had its last cycle in 4A?
But I think it was at St. Field.
Okay.
Well, they would have played twice, right? Because it's a 2-year cycle.
Maybe they played one of those games.
But I can't remember.
The first game when Kingston had turf.
Okay.
I think you might have covered that game, Lindy.
The thing I remember about Kingston finally getting turf was everybody got hurt.
There were quite a few knee injuries early on there.
At first.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. I remember that as well. 100%. So, all right. We talked a little bit about Jeff. We talked a little bit about Wash. I think we are down to Marion. Is that the last of all the Metro teams? We hit everybody else. The Wolves coming off a 2-7 season from a year ago. Lost the last four games. Had some injury issues, especially with the intended quarterback, Caleb Deers. Just kind of a reset season, I guess, maybe here for Marion and just maybe be a little more competitive, maybe break that win total from a season ago. Is that kind of what we're looking for?
KJ, go ahead. I think the fact they're in such a strong district, they've got Newton and Pella in there. Clear Creek Amana is supposed to be really good. I think it's going to be hard for them to get into that upper division. But go ahead, KJ.
The one thing that maybe was a silver lining last year, coming into this year with that injury to Deers, Andrew Ammon was able to get a lot of experience, a lot of snaps last year against a lot of really good teams, right? Threw for 7 touchdowns, rushed for another. So maybe that experience really kind of propels him into this season. They do have a lot of productivity to replace a lot of playmakers, but receiver wise, Matthew Denninger is back. He was one of their leading receivers last season. Landon Tilkus, Colby Belts, two of their better defenders, are also back. So they do have a couple pieces to the puzzle, guys that can lead the way, but we'll see how that works out for Marion going forward, especially that schedule you mentioned.
All right, let's run down to Iowa City real quick and talk about the four teams that represent that city. I think we need to start with Liberty. What a special season for the Bolts, for the Lightning. Obviously made it to the 5A semifinals last season at a heartbreaking loss to Southeast Polk, who just ironically, I guess, is those teams meet in week 2 of this season. Liberty has Cedar Falls to start out this season. Lost an awful lot of offensive firepower. Does return quarterback Reese Rettig, who had a phenomenal season last year. Threw for 2,719 yards, 32 touchdowns to 3 interceptions. KJ, I think you were down and talked to Coach Chandler. I mean, for them, it's for Liberty. It's just we know we got a proven commodity in Reddick. Find skill guys to go with him. Is that pretty much it?
Yeah, you know, and they're pretty high on the guys that they have coming back. It seems like so long ago since the first day of practice was on there to see him. But you know, when you've got Reddick, he's going to help guys kind of find their niche. They really worked on their chemistry and timing in the off season. You know, they do have some guys, but they lost such a great core of receivers, Dallas Miller, Colin Decker, you know, Sutton Kohler, obviously as well. So those guys aren't easily replaced, but you know, Jordan Schroeder is one of the guys that they're going to look at. You know, Lynn Bell, I believe, is more of a tight end type. He's somebody that is going to factor in. You know, Logan Labenthal was one of their leaders. The one thing with Liberty on the other side of the ball that I think is going to be interesting is, you know, last year they kind of were a work in progress. As the season went on, they got better when they finally found the right fit for players and positions that match the strengths of the guys. I think they're going to be ahead of the curve with that this year. They've got guys coming back that they kind of know how to utilize a little bit better, how everything works together. I think they're going to be a lot better defensively right out of the gate. And once that passing attack starts clicking and gets their timing down, this is going to be a team that I'll just put it out there. I think they're a team that gets back to the dome, and it's a team that can compete for a title. I just put it
out. I love it. We look at the other two 5A schools from Iowa City, and they're both kind of in the same boat in that they graduated prolific quarterbacks. Bobby Bacon at City High and Jack Wallace at Iowa City West. So I guess they're both kind of in the same boat that way. And we start the season with West and City High on Friday night, which is that happen? It seems unusually early to me.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't remember it before, but
I'll bet a week's salary it's not 40-39 again.
You don't think so?
No.
50-40, 50-49 this year? No?
No.
Okay. What we know about West, they do have a D1 player, Julie Manson, who's committed to Iowa. His father, of course, played quarterback for the Hawkeyes, and Jason. Dawson Call, I believe, stepped in at City High, right, and had a great season as a really tough running back. So maybe you start there with those two guys, but what do you see from the Little Hawks and the Trojans, I guess, guys?
I think you see another really good ball game. I think it's going to be, you know, a little bit more of a grind. Certainly not as high flying matchup as we've seen the last couple of years. But I think it's going to be competitive. And I don't know if I would say I know who's going to win that game. KJ,
the one thing that you can count on when you have coaches like Garrett Hartwig and Mitch Moore. They're going to blow. I mean, the drop-off isn't going to be that great. So, yeah, they graduated some really talented players, some key skill positions. But, you know, there are guys waiting in the wings to get their chance, guys that have worked in the offseason. Both of these teams are still going to be good. You know, I think it's a coin flip. I think it's a coin flip, and right out of the gate, I can't remember you know, like you mentioned, City High West, Wash Chef, some notable rivalries, you know, starting the season. Boy, you couldn't ask for a better gauge and exciting way to start the season.
All right, let's go to the remaining Iowa City school, and that would be Iowa City Regina, which has a whole lot of talent coming back and some highly recruited talent as far as major colleges go. And this all from the smallest school that we're going to talk about here in Regina, which is in 2A. And I think the Regals, what, went all the way through the regular season unbeaten last year and then lost, if I remember correctly. Does that sound right? Or was it second round, Wilton?
I think they lost the quarterfinals to Wilton, but I think they had a regular season loss.
Okay. But, I mean,
I think there's a three-way tie at the top of their district that they might have won the tiebreaker with Wilton and somebody else. Lindy, does that sound familiar?
Yeah. I think there were three teams at 4-1 and three at 1-4. Was it Beckman? Did Beckman beat them?
Possibly.
I'll look it up.
I was down at Regina last week, and I tell you, when you talk about a luxury, just the weapons and the athletes at the disposal of Coach Dustin Ellsbury and offensive coordinator Ed Hinkle. I mean, just got to be giggling silly thinking about all the things that they can do and set up this season. When you look at, you know, All-State quarterback Kyle Tracy threw for 1,900 yards and 19 touchdowns last year. And just a real side note, are we ever going to see a quartet of quarterbacks like we did last year in Iowa City in one metropolitan area to have four? Tracy, Bacon, Wallace, and Reddick, obviously. I mean, I don't think we'll ever see that again. But back to Gina, you know, Savion Miller, you talked about heavy recruits. You know, he's had offers from the University of Miami in Florida, Missouri, Iowa State. You know, he's coming off a year where he had over 1,100 yards of total offense, eight touchdowns. Then you got Tate Wallace, a tight end type on offense that is being recruited mostly as a defender, linebacker actually. But, you know, he had 752 receiving yards and 51 catches, eight touchdowns. So he's they've got a lot of weapons. And then they've got some guy like Gabe Hagelheimer, the All-State kicker last year, right? You're not really expecting an All-State kicker to step in, but Dustin Ellsbury says he's going to be in the backfield with Miller, and they're going to do a lot of two-back sets just because Hagelheimer so talented. He's going to be able to spell Miller a little bit, keep him fresh. They can run both of them, and it's going to cause fits for defenses because he's such a strong rusher, just a sophomore. So they've got a treasure trove of offensive weapons. And then defensively, if you got Wallace, Ellsbury said, you know, he's a linebacker by trade, but they're going to put him at DN, move him around a little bit to find some mismatches just because he is so versatile. He's so physical. He's big, strong, and he's athletic. And especially at the 1A level, that's, you know, he's going to probably run roughshod over quite a few. So Regina, really looking to get back to the dome. I think we mentioned lost to Wilton in the quarterfinals. And, of course, that's who they open up this season with in the non-district game. So I kind of asked, and they skirted it a little bit, say, oh, it's just a week one game, it doesn't matter. But I think deep down there's a little extra fire to be able to get another shot at Wilton here after last year's finish.
Did you say running back kicker combination, KJ?
He was an all-state kicker last year, and he's expected to be a pretty productive running back this year. And I know last year he had a handful of carries, scored a touchdown, but
I'm thinking I'm thinking maybe you pitch it out to him and he drop kicks it for 3 points.
Hey, you never know. It depends on the situation.
Exactly. Right. You know,
And actually, sometimes Hinkle can be a mad scientist at times.
Yes.
Maybe if Hinkle's watching, they fold that into the mix.
Come on, Ed. I want to see it. I had never seen a drop kick attempt before. So let's go, baby.
Let's do it one time.
All right. Let's go to our preseason poll. We put together our list of top tens in each class and released them, a week or so ago, ish. And we'll start with 5A, where we have West Des Moines Valley ranked number one, West Des Moines Dowling at 2. Liberty at 3, Southeast Polk 4, Ankeny 5, Waukee Northwest 6, Straight Waukee 7, Cedar Falls 8, Sioux City East 9, Johnston 10. And guys, you mentioned all the intriguing first week matchups, Valley and Dowling play in week one as well.
That's another one.
Yeah, exactly. So we have, as usual, a lot of representation from the Des Moines suburban schools in the top 10, but until you beat them, that's going to be the way it is, right?
Yep. You got Valley Dowling. You got Ankeny Centennial against Southeast Polk. You got Liberty Cedar Falls. You got Waukee Johnston. You got Northwest and Ankeny. So we're going to see a lot of movement after week one.
I love it. You know, Let's go. Why work into things? Let's see. And obviously it'll just be 1 week, but I think we'll get some answers from some questions certainly in week one and 5A. No doubt about that. So 4A, we had Xavier at number one, Council Bluffs Lewis Central 2, Pella 3, Sergeant Bluff Luton 4, Fort Dodge 5, Decorah 6, Newton in there at 7. Clear Creek Amanda, we have ranked 8th, and then a tie for 9th between ADM, Adel DeSoto, Minburn, and North Scott. Clear Creek Amanda, second year for Lance Peterson as the head coach there. Looks like they're going to have another really strong season. We already talked about Xavier and Decorah. Heartbreaking loss to North Scott last season, and I think it was the quarterfinals in 4A. But the Vikings should be strong again, right?
Yeah. Yep, they will be.
Yeah, and I think they're – I mean, I know it's going to sound weird because, you know, we have them sixth, but I think that might be a team that's a little underrated. I mean, they return some really good players, especially guys on the defensive side of the ball. I think that's a team that's going to make a lot of noise. I'm not exactly sure how their schedule kind of racks up and if they're going to get those good matches to really show what they're capable of. But I think this is a team, that's gonna be really, really good this year.
Yeah. They open at Waukon on Friday. Then they host Crestwood. They go to Wallert, the defending 3A champion, in week 3. They got Western Dubuque in week 4, and they're at Xavier in week 8. So, yeah, they'll have some opportunities there.
Yeah, so that, especially that the back-to-back games with Wallert and Western Dubuque, that'll certainly be a dip in your toe in the water to get a sense of the temperature.
All right, let's go to 3A. We have Mount Vernon at number one, Algona at 2, Sioux City Healing 3, Humboldt 4, Clear Lake 5. We've got Solon at number 6, defending champ Wallert at number 7, Harlan 8, Nevada 9, Benton Community at 10, So our top two teams are Mount Vernon and Algona, who played a classic in the playoffs last year. The Mount Vernon rallied from well down in the second half to win. Boy, it'd be something if they just happened to face each other again, this time maybe for a state championship hotline, huh?
Yeah, Algona, you know, they lost the really good quarterback in Mansky, but they played a pretty good amount of the year without him last year anyway, right? Yep. Due to injury.
His brother took over and it's just as good. So
Three Mansky brothers that have really lit things up for them over the last few years.
But we know about Mount Vernon and the firepower it has coming back, especially in the skill positions, right?
Yeah, they've got some really good kids there, you know, all over the board there. Let me look at their
Dylan Haverback.
Yeah,
Haverback, Ryan Jaspers. Yep. You know, they've got some dudes, as people would say, on both sides of the ball.
The final Ryan child, right?
Yeah,
this is number nine, right?
Is this the youngest one
for this generation? But there'll be the second generation isn't that far behind. That does get a little bit,
a little bit of a lag, maybe until we nick at the next generation.
It won't be long.
Let's look at Class 2A. We have Carroll Kemper in there at number one. Central Line, George Little Rock at two. Van Meters three. Cherokee four. OABCIG at five. Mid Prairie at six. Prairie City Monroe and Roland Story are tied. We have at seven, Osage nine, and Spirit Lake at 10. We had a story, I guess, the other day about Mid Prairie. And again, another team that has a lot of exceptional skill players back, including what? Hudson Ehrenfeld, the best running back, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, pretty exceptional player there that'll be leaned on to kind of carry the load for Mid Prairie. But, you know, that's a team that, you know, seven wins, I think, last year for them. Certainly a lot of experience play a factor and probably be able to up that total.
And I think if I remember right,
great game week one is Cherokee at Kemper, 1-4.
Okay, there we go. There we go. As far as Mid Prairie, I think it was one of those deals where they've had a really tough non-district schedule here for the last number of years and haven't had maybe the wins in those games that you know so they go into district kind of unnoticed a little bit, I guess, basically is what I'm saying. And this year it's Washington, Iowa to start out with, and at Albernette, and then Sigourney, Kyoto. Those two teams play every year. So excited to see what Mid Prairie can do, certainly as we head into the 2025 season there in 2A. Let's look at 1A. If my computer, there we go. We've got number one is defending champ Grundy Center. Again, you got to rank them number one until somebody beats them. West Lyon at two, Iowa City, Regina three, South Hardin four, Tri-Center five, Pleasantville six, Trainer seven, Sigourney, Kyoto at eight, Underwood at nine, and Emmitsburg at 10. And I believe, was Tri-Center the Class A champion last year, guys?
Yeah, and West Lyon was the 2A champ.
There we go. So we got one champ. We got three champs basically in 1A. How about that?
And I was going to say, you know, with Regina, you look at the talent they have, and you would think for most years it would be head and shoulders above the rest. But when you look at how clogged the top of Class 1A is with talent, just with Grundy Center, West Lyon, Regina, and I didn't even think of Tri-Center, that's going to be a really interesting competition to see how that all kind of unfolds throughout the year. Probably the best teams in that top, I guess, top heavy with talented teams in Class 1A compared to other
And Grundy's won three or four in a row state championships. So
they've won the last three 1A titles.
Okay.
I think. Yeah. I think they won Class A before that.
Okay. There we go. There we go. So
To answer our previous question, it is four in a row for Southeast Polk, by the way.
It is. Okay. Pretty incredible. How about Class A, where we have a tie at the top between Maquoketa Valley and St. Ansgar, West Hancock at 3, Madrid at 4, Woodbury Central is number 5, ACGC at 6, Oakland Riverside 7, MMCRU at 8, Wapsie Valley at 9, South Winnesheek and West Soon a tie at 10. Lindy, I know you went to Del High and talked to the Wildcats, who have almost everybody back. From a really good team last season, and this is a team that's should be pretty darn good, especially from an offensive standpoint, right?
Their skill players, like Coach Christensen says, he doesn't know if there's anybody in Class A that has better skill kids than them. Brady Wall's a senior. He's, I think, a four-year starter now at quarterback. They've just got – good kids all around on both sides of the ball. You know, if their line, I don't think their line's going to be very big, but you know, in Class A, 1A, I'd rather have a fast line than a big line anyway. So, I think they're going to be a load. I think, you know, they want to get to the Uni Dome. Maquoketa Valley's never been there, and they want to win a couple games when they get there.
And that's saying something, because that's a program that's traditionally been very strong. Was it Kurt Felt, I think, was there for a number of years and won a ton of football games up there at Maquoketa Valley. So, yeah, I think who's Mac Valley got to start out with, Lindy? Is it Starmont?
Starmont,
yes.
Okay. All right, now we're down to 8 player, where we have Algona Garrigan at number 1. Woodbine's our number 2. Gladbrook Rhinebeck 3. Fremont Mills 4. Aforementioned Iowa Valley at 5, Lenox 6, Montezuma 7, Don Bosco and Remsen St. Mary's are tied at 8, Audubon at 10, along with Bedford, also a tie there. Iowa Valley and Montezuma, I guess, represent our area. I guess Don Bosco as well, always a traditional power. I guess that's kind of what you see, right? An 8 player year after year is kind of the same programs, it seems like, right?
Yeah. And every now and then somebody jumps up. I think Edco is still going to be really good. They lost the big stud from last year, but I think they're still going to have a fine team. And I think they're probably the team to beat in that district that also has Springville in with them.
So are there any more Rochfords coming through?
I don't know.
Just the coach, right?
Okay. Well, that's still a good Rochford to have on your side then too. He's done a great job with that program, especially with their transition to 8 player as well. You know, I still don't count out a healthy Springville either. One player can make a big difference. And like I said, I think defensively, they did a good job against Iowa Valley and just kind of got worn down once Iowa Valley started to click a little bit. So that's a team that could sneak into the top 10 as the season goes along.
You talked about Edco. Go ahead, KJ.
One thing too, but Lindy – I know BGM is one of the schools that moved from 8 player to to Class A. BGM's usually been on that the top 10 threshold.
I've already gotten one email wondering why I had them so low in their Class A district. So yep, they're Class A now. So it's Midland. Midland's been up to 1A. I'm sorry, up to A. New London's in A now. There might be another one or two statewide.
The difficulty of that, guys, just think about that. I mean, it's hard enough going from 11 to 8, but now all of a sudden you got to find 3 more guys.
And 2 of them have to be linemen.
Yeah, on each side of the ball, right? You know, that's got to be just, I would think, immensely much more challenging than going from 11 to 8, right?
Yeah, I would think so.
I would think so. You know, and especially when you don't have that great of a pool, and by great of a pool, I mean the numbers, to just have, you know, 6 foot, 250 pound linemen don't grow on trees, you know. Maybe in some of the smaller farm communities they do, but, you know, those are guys that you might need, good programs could have, and trying to create or drum up two extras is hard to do. The other thing too is just the logistics of changing your field, you know, having to reset goalposts and redo things after you have gotten accustomed to the facility that you're using now. It's maybe I'm making it out to be more of a headache than it is, but it just seems like that would be one other thing, transitioning to 8-player and then going back to 11-player. Yeah. Maybe they kind of kept some things in place just in case that that would happen.
You got to dig those goalposts out, maybe, or at least one of them, right?
Yeah.
Both of them.
Yeah.
Move them. You know, most of these schools have tracks, so you got to move them both.
Yep. Listen, you know, we've talked a lot about the week one schedule and some of the yummy matchups that we have. Let's make sure we go through the schedule as far as the Cedar Rapids and Iowa City schools. We mentioned the boot in week one, Weston, City High at City High. Liberty hosts Cedar Falls. Regina is at Wilton, or is it the other way around? I apologize.
For that. At Wilton.
Okay, at Wilton. Here in town, we talked about Washington and Jefferson playing each other. Kennedy goes up to Dubuque to play Hempstead. Prairie and Linmar play out at Linmar. And who am I forgetting here, guys? Xavier.
At North Scott.
At North Scott.
Did you mention Marion at West Delaware?
Yeah, Marion at West Delaware. Thank you, KJ. So where are you guys going to be here on Friday night, I guess, as we kind of pimp our coverage, so to speak? We'll be out at a ton of games and do have a huge roundup in the Green Gazette Friday night leading into Saturday, and then obviously we'll do a rewind and things. So where's everybody at on Friday night?
I'm actually going to go out to Center Point and see my buddy Norman. And
Norman.
He loves you. CPU against Albernette. And can you believe that Albernette's a 2A school in football now?
Yeah. How about that? KJ, you'll be at Kingston, right?
Yeah. I'm going to be at the East versus West Side battle at Kingston. See if Washington can get another win, or if Jefferson can kind of turn the tide. That Beast of the East versus Best of the West, at least how it used to be. I'm looking forward to that.
I'll have the boot out over at Bates Field at Iowa City High School. So looking forward to that. We are covering, as I mentioned, many other games. I know we'll have somebody at Liberty for the big game against Cedar Falls in particular. I know Mike Condon will be out at Linmar for that game against Cedar Rapids Prairie. So the Gazette.com is a place you want to be. We're going to continue, I know, with our class-by-class stories. And I have to plead ignorance here where we're at on that. I think we're 3A, or 3A maybe.
Today's newspaper in Green Gazette had a feature on Williamsburg in 3A with the start of the Austin Blythe era, taken over for Kurt Ritchie, who I'm going to go out and see at Cornell tonight for their media day and scrimmage with Simpson. So looking forward to that. And then we have 4A with a story from Doug Miles on Clear Creek Amana, going in what would be Thursday's Green Gazette. Should be online this afternoon or this evening. And then JJ, you have the 5A story.
Yeah, on Kennedy. Yep, on Kennedy. That'll be for Friday. Yeah. Whatever. I don't even know what today is. I'll never watch.
It'll be for Friday. That'll roll right into our week one coverage.
Awesome. Anything, anybody? We didn't even mention Williamsburg. I don't know how we went right past that. But as you mentioned, KJ, Kurt Ritchie kind of with a stunner, right?
Yeah, decided to change things up and take the head coaching job at Cornell College. You know, Hall of Fame coach. Boy, I was astounded. Do you know how many years in a row they've qualified for the playoffs?
I do not. I bet Lindy might have a pretty accurate guess.
I don't.
17.
17. Wow.
And this is all under Kurt Ritchie, who's taken them to, I believe, four state finals games and, of course, the 2023 3A championship. But the last time Williamsburg has not been in the playoffs was 2007. And actually, under Ritchie's tenure that started – I think in 2001, when he left Iowa or English Valleys for Williamsburg, only 2 years he didn't make the playoffs. That was 03 and 07. And of course, one of those players, Austin Blythe, who graduated in 2011, so would have been his senior season, would have been the fall of 2010, was one of those players for Ritchie during that tenure. Now he's got some big shoes to fill, stepping in for Coach Ritchie. They've got some talent. Grady Wiegen, the younger brother of Caden Wiegen, the University of Iowa return specialist, one of those guys. Interestingly about Grady Wiegen, he's a wide receiver nose tackle combo. When was the last time you saw that? Remember when Mark Atwater was a QB linebacker? Mm-hmm. I thought that was rare. But a wide receiver, both tackle, I don't remember that before. But, you know, he's 6'3", 205. He's athletic. He's going to cause some fits. And it could be one of those playmakers, you know, like his brother, like a Weisskopf, like a Heitman here for Williamsburg. They do have a big hole to fill with Grant Hooker heading to South Dakota, who actually plays at Iowa State this weekend. So we'll see if they can get some people to the ball. But I think Blythe will have a similar approach as Ritchie, just a few little tweaks and additions to put his own personal stamp on it, and expect the same aggressive style of defense that they play. And I know they're not in our top 10 ranking, but they're going to be a highly competitive team this year, even with some of the talent they lost.
And if they're not successful, Thanksgiving supper might be a little awkward, considering Austin Blythe is the son-in-law of Kurt Ritchie. So.
Right, right.
All right, boys, anything anybody wants to add before we sign off here?
I got one thing. I want both you guys to give me one or two teams from the area that may have been under 500 last year, maybe didn't make the playoffs, that you think is going to make a big jump.
I'm going Cedar Rapids Prairie right off top. And maybe South Wind would be another one.
Like Prairie as well. Team that didn't make the playoffs, boy. I'm not sure. I'm not sure on a second one there. I really like Prairie. Trying to figure out Kennedy. I think Kennedy's going to be another one that.
That's a good one too.
I think that's going to be a big one.
Yeah. All right. What do you got, Lindy?
I agree with you on South Wind. I actually think they've got a very good chance to win that district that also has St. Ansgar.
Really?
Wow. When's the last time you ever used the words West Branch and Dark Horse?
Yeah, right.
You know, they were 3-7 last year. That's not going to happen again, even though they're up a class now into 2A. I think they've got a chance to win that district.
Matt Hughes is the new coach there. He was at Clear Creek and Mana.
Right.
At one point, a former University of Iowa linebacker, and his son Ty was actually quarterback for West Branch for beloved late head coach Butch Peterson. So,
boys, one other interesting Williamsburg note: they head down to Keokuk to open the season. Anybody know who the head coach at Keokuk is?
It's not James Vandenberg, is it?
No.
Oh,
but okay. I would say you're kind of close, but think of Hawkeye related, because this was something that Austin Blythe kind of pointed out. I believe Marvin McNutt is
down. Oh, that's there. Right. I did know that. Yeah.
So he was kind of excited to go down and play play them because of Marvin being down there.
Awesome. Were they teammates in Iowa, maybe?
I can't remember how that the timelines but I think they probably were.
Okay. Because Marvin was, I know he worked at Cole College for a while. He's been around the local football scene for, you know, since he graduated from the University of Iowa. So, wow, small world. Yeah. There's your tidbit of information for the day, folks, right there, courtesy of KJ. So, boys, enjoy week one. I think the weather's going to be perfect. Everybody try and get out to a game if you can, and certainly watch. I think we're going to have a running scoreboard going on our website again on Friday night at thegazette.com. And let's kick her off, boys. Let's do this thing.
Sounds good.
Awesome.
For the Triple Option Podcast, this is Jeff Johnson for Jeff Linder and KJ Pilcher. Thanking you for joining us, and we'll get back at you again next week. Have a good weekend.
Keep your head on a swivel.